This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and this time of year we have been sitting still, maybe. We've been hunched over a lot. Those cold temperatures can have a big impact on the body. And joining me in studio is Dr. Christina Kraft. She is a chiropractor, and we are going to talk about a number of things that Dr. Kraft is interested in, from working with bull riders and rodeo clowns to helping alleviate the stresses of farming and the importance of guided meditation and paying attention to your breath. Dr. Kraft, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, people think chiropractics and they just think like crack your neck, crack your back. Maybe that's as much as they know. How does chiropractics really work?
Well, truly, in the realm of prevention, chiropractic reigns number one, in my opinion. Chiropractic started 125 years ago by looking at the spine and misalignments of the spine causing disease. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a very simple philosophy, but truly what we're really doing in chiropractic is restoring nervous system flow by adjustments to the spine. And so essentially, I tell people it's kind of like a rock on a hose. If our spine is not working well or not functioning well, the rock is on that nerve, okay? So the chiropractor comes in, removes that misalignment, removes that rock, if you will, or we also call that rock a subluxation, removing that subluxation where then the healing energy of that nerve flow can actually flow again. So it's very, very philosophical, and there's a lot of art involved in chiropractic, and there's a lot of science involved in chiropractic. So that's basically how chiropractic works.
What is your schooling like? Do you have an MD and then go on to get specialized training? Do you not necessarily need to be a medical doctor before this?
Nope, you do not have to be a medical doctor. In fact, this is a specialty specific to spinal and nervous system dysfunction. So I actually began my post high school training was at Minot State University in Minot, North Dakota, where I obtained my 4-year degree in biology, and then went on to get 4 more years of postgraduate work in chiropractic. So it's specific training for chiropractors. However, many chiropractors I do know, not many, there are some that are out there that do maybe have a medical doc. They're a medical doctor and a chiropractor, but pretty rare.
Okay.
That's pretty rare for those people. Most people that decide to become a chiropractor, that's kind of what we want to do for the rest of our lives. So
how did you choose the school that you went to? Because in these parts, the two main ones are the Palmer College and the Northwestern Health and Sciences University. There are other options depending on where you live in the country and where you want to go. How did you choose the Palmer College?
Oh, I'll tell you why. It's a big, big part of why I became a chiropractor. So in my high school years, I grew up on a dairy farm near Minot, North Dakota. Working a lot on the farm, playing 4 sports at a time, I started getting problems with neck pain and headaches. Mm. Started seeking chiropractic care, and at that time, it was my brother who was, at the time, almost ready to be done with Palmer College of Chiropractic. So my first adjustments were really by my brother, who is now practicing, very successful practice in Minot, North Dakota. So I started getting under adjustments and started noticing miraculous changes right away. We were a family that weren't really into over-the-counters and prescriptions. We were farmers. We wanted more of a natural approach to health. And so I just knew right then and there that this is what I wanted to do. This was helping me so much. Why would I not want to go pursue this too? So my brother, first of all, took me to the Palmer College of Chiropractic, which is the fountainhead of chiropractic in Davenport, Iowa. I was 16 years old. He took me to class with him. And I just knew without a doubt this is what I wanted to do. People were helping people with their hands. I grew up, again, on the farm. I just loved working with my hands. And so, again, 125 years ago, Palmer College of Chiropractic started, and I'm really excited for that. They're going to be doing a huge 125-year celebration this year in Davenport, Iowa. And it's truly the beginning of where chiropractic started as a profession. And you should see how much it has changed even in the last 10 years since I left that particular school. But I chose it for the fact that it was kind of close to home. Being from North Dakota, it was still closer than some of the colleges that are in the South and West and coasts and things like that. But again, family was there first. And I just didn't have any other choices to make after that. When I decided to go to Palmer, that's where I decided to go. Sure. And they also have two more campuses. Palmer has a campus in Florida as well as in California, but I chose to stay in the Midwest.
Sure. Would you have gotten a substantially different education outside of Palmer College? Like, is there sort of a philosophical difference in how you approach chiropractic?
Great. That's a really great point. I still believe that the Palmer College of Chiropractic hones that portion of our philosophy. We do get more philosophy training, in my opinion. I still would have to look at the curriculum, what the schools are doing now and what they're not teaching anymore. I really think it's important for them to keep that philosophy going because, for instance, back in the 20s, chiropractors were thrown into jail for doing what we're doing. We still talk about it in philosophy classes at Palmer, okay? We need to keep that understanding, knowing that we were once called quacks. We are still called quacks, but we're helping people. And I believe that we are becoming more and more accepted all the time. In fact, more and more people, like I just told you prior to getting on today, 40% of Americans are looking for us. They're looking for naturopathic doctors. They're looking for chiropractors. They're looking for drug-free options for their health. And I absolutely 100% believe that the philosophies that holistic practitioners are learning in their schools needs to be a foundation of them moving forward and being brave in sharing natural options with the world, if you will. So I chose Palmer hands down because it is the first school ever for chiropractic care in the world. And then all of the schools have kind of branched off away from, you know, but they still come into this close-knit art science philosophy that Palmer began with, the Palmer family began us with. So
What are your feelings on integrative care? And that is the concept of where there might be a more holistic approach, like a chiropractor or like yoga training or like an Ayurvedic practitioner, body-based, earth-based medicine that can be sometimes made available at a hospital that would be otherwise practicing primarily Western tradition. We've had an acupuncturist, for example, who practices at Sanford. How do you feel about integrative care?
This is where we're going. This is what I want to see more of. And I have worked in integrative practices in the past. So after college, Palmer College of Chiropractic, I worked in a large interdisciplinary practice where we had acupuncturists, naturopathic doctors, chiropractors. We did bioneurofeedback. We also referred often to physical therapy. Another one that we would refer to a lot is clinical psychologists. We're dealing a lot with people with pain. They're going to be in a lot of emotional as well as mental health, possibly having some issues in that area. So for me, integrating as much as possible the conservative route, which is where chiropractors stand, and I also work with people with nutritional needs as well. But this is where we're going. I mean, this is where people are right now. They may have that medical doctor, right, to monitor everything that they have as far as maybe those needs, medicine needs, then the chiropractors and the naturopathics are coming in and looking at some things a little bit different for them. In fact, I would say most of my patients have that variety of people in their health journey because I'm a firm believer in what I do, but I know that I can't help everybody with everything that we're providing as services and healing services in our office and in our profession. But most chiropractors, we are part of this interdisciplinary action, and we are often the place where people find the most answers.
We're visiting with chiropractor Dr. Christina Kraft. And Dr. Kraft, I have gone to different chiropractors throughout the years, and sometimes you get that really deep, like, and that's your whole neck. And honestly, there's something weird about me, and I love that. And then sometimes they bring out that little tool that sort of looks like a hammer, and it doesn't feel like it did anything at all. So when you are determining a course of treatment, is it the, you know, some chiropractors seem to only do the big cracks. Some seem to only do the little manipulations. Is that the doctor's preferred approach one way or the other? Or do some people need the big ones? Some people need the small ones. Who makes that call?
It's a great question. Training and choice of doctor. So for me, I am a hands-on holistic practitioner, meaning hands-on all the way. However, I also use what you have mentioned in a couple tools. There are different tools that chiropractors can use. And in fact, there's over 100 types of techniques chiropractors use, hands-on or not hands-on tables. There's different devices that we use. The activator and the integrator are the two types of tools that you'll see in some of those practices
activator,
that use tools.
That's what I
And then another technique. yes. And then another technique, which I don't practice, is torque release. That's using an integrator. So the tool is just a little bit different, a little smaller handheld. So yeah, there is a lot of maybe some myths out there. That type of chiropractic, the tool chiropractic isn't as effective. In fact, that's not true. I actually seek care from a manual chiropractor, a hands-on chiropractor, and an integrator or activator-based chiropractor for certain needs. So truly, when we are putting a force or a thrust into the nervous system, it doesn't have to be super, super, quote-unquote, crunchy, okay? I'm going to be honest. I'm the crunchy chiropractor. Yeah. If you want to come and have a manual adjustment, that's what you're going to seek from me. However, I also do a couple different techniques that have a much less force. I do some cranial sacral work. Sacral occipital technique uses blocks underneath the pelvis to take away the anterior and posterior rotation of pelvis. Pelvis issues in the population, including from children, women, pregnancy, and adult, is the main issue why we see headaches. So I work on balancing the pelvis to help with natural approaches to headache relief. So that's a whole nother thing. But as far as being hands-on or using a activator or tool-based approach, that's the absolutely going to be the practitioner's choice. But in some cases, there will be times where I will not manually adjust a elderly person's cervical spine, and then I will get out my activator or integrator tools. We're still putting force into the joints. We're still making improvements with range of motion and improving nervous system flow by actually taking pressure off nerves when we adjust that area. So two things there, dear. It's really doctor preference and the training that they want to go with. And it depends on the individual person's needs. We can balance, and if we have a more variety of services and a variety of techniques that we've been trained in, like myself, I will be able to customize the approach of treatment I need to apply to that person's spine.
Okay. So you mentioned a balance and of course, just alignment to the two overarching concepts of why you'd want to go to a chiropractor at all is getting these things in balance and in alignment so that your body can work for you. But I'm wondering, like, you're coming in for low back pain and you can get adjusted and adjusted and adjusted, but if you never strengthen your core, are you doing yourself that much good? Or if you've got hip pain and you just only ever buy flip-flops at the dollar store, you know, there's a lifestyle component to this.
Absolutely. That's what I teach. I have been doing this for 11 years. Truly in the beginning, the power that made the body heals the body is step one. All of my patients learn to understand that. And that is maybe somewhat more of a philosophical, spiritual aspect of my practice. But what we're really trying to do is, in all areas of that health, that spiritual part is part of this. Structural, physical, emotional, chemical, nutritional. We look at all of those aspects of health. And you're absolutely correct. The chiropractic lifestyle, at least in my practice, I can't speak for all chiropractors, teaches us the holistic approach in all of those areas that I just mentioned to improve lifestyle. People can really change their minds and change their health in chiropractic offices. I've not only seen it, I've done it for myself. Again, being in my brother's chiropractic practice changed my life, not only because of pain. And then we start working with the health of the body. We start alkalizing the body with proper nutrition. Absolutely. Shoes, you mentioned. Beds, pillows. Mm-hmm. We are really the advocates, the wellness advocates that the community is looking for. And we're not going to know everything, right? But we really are the ones, chiropractors, and I'm advocating today for all chiropractic because I want more people to be under chiropractic care. Yes, I'd love to see more patients in my office as well too, but I'm advocating for all chiropractors because what I said earlier is that we're often leading people to some answers. And even if it's home changes, minimizing their sugar content to improve their alkalinity, if we're getting them to sleep better, getting them to have better mood and better sleep and better energy under chiropractic care and then changing the diet just a little bit,
sure,
people can do that. People can't just go cold turkey on a lot of things, but they can maybe get under a couple of adjustments and start drinking more water and cutting back on sugar. that's the approach that I have, is this approach where it's not all or none. It's just that's really hard, and that's really hard for me even. I don't like to be all or none myself. So we need to be gentle with ourselves. We need to honor ourselves when we're going through a crisis as far as stress is concerned. But I'm telling you, when we get people adjustments and we get them just drinking more water, those two simple things, mm-hmm. which are very powerful, they can deal with stressors better.
Mm-hmm. So it's treating the body as a system. And, you know, when you say better nutrition and a better fitness approach, like those make very obvious, immediate sense. But you said spiritual health, too. And this is something that I hear a lot from holistic or nature-based practitioners. But their idea of spirituality differs. What do you mean when you say spiritual?
To keep it more in the metaphysical or more mainstream idea is teaching people mindfulness, okay? This isn't the type of spiritual thing that, you know, when we think this person, you know, Dr. Kraft is a spiritual healer practitioner. Yes, I am. However, we're not going to make you sit down and chant Om for 3 hours, okay? What we're starting to produce in a person is this understanding and awareness that if you don't understand who you are as a person, you are going to find chaos and illness somehow in your body or in your life. So what we're trying to do is understand, getting people to be under, when they start healing physically, we start healing emotionally and we start healing spiritually, meaning there's just this overall reality change where, and your reality can change where you now understand what healing and wellness is all about. So mindfulness practices is really what I like to teach as far as that spiritual part. So meditation, teaching. I don't teach yoga, but I teach them to find a yoga practice that's going to help improve their spiritual sense of themselves and truly connecting with wherever their higher power really is for them. If they have a religion they choose to find their spiritual higher power, that's great. Otherwise, in the overall realm of spirituality for me is truly finding yourself and connecting with yourself at the deepest level. And I believe people they want that. That's what spiritual health is for me, is mm-hmm. connecting with yourself more than connecting with a higher power, truly connecting more with yourself. So I teach different things like guided meditations as a group or one-on-ones. And it's just really a great practice for people to start cultivating in their own lives as well.
Mm-hmm. How do you teach guided meditation? Because I can't tell you the amount of times I've heard from people that say, oh, I can't meditate.
Well, I still can't meditate some days, and I've been doing it for years. So we have busy minds, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we are bombarded with, women are bombarded with 85,000 thoughts per day, and almost all of them are negative. So the only way to combat that negative mind, even if we don't want that little monkey on our shoulder, is to develop some type of a opposite practice, yoga meditation. Mm-hmm. There could be different kinds of yoga meditation meditation apps on your phones mm-hmm. now, right? We can find them everywhere. 49 breaths is what I love to teach, and this was designed by Dr. Sid Williams, a chiropractor. He's now passed, but he taught 49 breaths for himself to get through his work, you know, busy healing work days, and then he took it to his patients, and I'm doing the same. Not many chiropractors will teach 49 breath guided meditation series. I just feel like it's my duty to teach people how to calm, connect. This is a breath series as well as including positive affirmations. So how do I teach guided meditations? Actually, guided meditations, I think, are easier for some people because, right, raise my hands too, and that's probably why I like to teach it. It's this understanding that it doesn't have to be perfect. And it's called meditation practice for a reason. So is yoga, right? It's practice mm-hmm. for a reason. And when you get a group of people together that are just wanting to improve their day, that's pretty cool. And something like a guided meditation, usually I have groups of 10. That's where you just start making you change one person's mindset in that class. That's worth it to me. Mm-hmm. So breath work and affirmations is the type of meditations that I teach.
progress, not perfection.
Yes.
What got you interested in working with people active on the rodeo circuit?
Oh, we're taking that switch right now. I love it. All right. So after I graduated from Palmer College of in Davenport, Iowa in 2009, my very first practice I worked in was in rural Nebraska. So I was a rural, I mean, we're talking pretty small, corn country, beef country, and I grew up on a farm. I connected with those people quite quickly. And I was introduced to working with the PRCA at that time with the doctor that I worked under. So we were at rodeo, and we also were, at that time, I was a licensed animal therapist. We were performing, and I will be, we'll talk maybe a little bit more about this as well, what my plans are for my practice future in Minnesota. Animal chiropractic, we practice canine equine, and he also worked on some of the actual bucking bulls. Believe it or not, you can actually adjust an animal, and it's very, very effective. And my plan is to include that specifically canine and equine chiropractic care for animals in the state of Minnesota, but it's going to take us a little bit more time to get that established, recertifications, and it's going to take me away from practice to do that. So that's coming. I'm really excited about that. Why the PRCA? Because I didn't grow up with rodeo. I didn't grow up with horses, but I always wanted to. So when I got around the ability to be around these people as a sports chiropractor, it was like no-brainer for me. It was just no-brainer for me. So in Nebraska, I did that. And then as I was then practicing, started my practice in Moorhead in 2018, I reached out to the Minnesota PRCA and asked them, say, hey, do you have an event chiropractor? No, we don't. Come on out. So I did pro bono work for these two events that I was in. And basically, in exchange for me to be there, right, just a great event. I had my truck, my trailer, and my table there, and I just checked people till midnight, both nights that I was there on the two rodeos that I was at. So I was at the Holly Rodeo in June, I believe it was, and then around the 4th of July, we were at Park Rapids helping cowboys and cowgirls. It was pretty cool.
I can't imagine what happens to those spines. And
it's pretty terrible.
Especially if you're getting thrown from the animal.
Yeah, I would have to say, you know, people think the bull rider is the most crazy one. I actually think it's the steer wrestler because
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Steer wrestling, so they don't wear helmet, and they typically don't wear any protective gear around their chest. So right now, bull riders are beginning to wear more and more helmet, and they're wearing the actual, I guess you would call it a brace or something around the chest to protect them. But the steer wrestler doesn't really wear anything, and you know, so they'll come over to the booth after they ran, you know, and I'll check them, and you know, they're most likely have been beat up. They probably have had broken bones in the past, ribs, shoulder blades, scapula, you know, all of that. But what's really cool is these people are really young, and the only way for them to make money in their sport is to get banged around. I mean, look at NFL, look at, you know, even the soccer players. We have. In order for us, for those people to make significant income, they have to be beat up. And so it was really cool. Some of the guys that were in Park Rapids were actually at the NFR in Vegas and took home big prize money. So for me to be able to follow them a little bit, hey, I checked them at this rodeo, and here they are at the National Finals Rodeo in Vegas. It's really cool to just kind of follow up and stay connected with them a little bit and to be a part of that journey, even though I was at a little rodeo for them in somewhere, nowhere, Minnesota. It's still part of their journey, and it was really cool to help them. So
we're visiting with chiropractor Dr. Christina Kraft, and we have to take a break now for the news, but we will be back with Dr. Kraft to talk more about what she does, and especially we got to talk about concussions. But first, this news.
From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald. The executive director of the National Sunflower Association says just like other commodities, the sunflower harvest was delayed because of the weather.
We've still got about 20% of the crop left that needs to be harvested in the U.S., here in North Dakota, it's probably a little bit higher. I'd say closer to that 25-30% level that hasn't been harvested. But I know that, you know, weather permitting, producers are out there trying to get the crop off.
John Sandbachen says it looks like the crop will be about the same size as last year. However,
based on what we had seen in October, that's still down about 23% from what we had anticipated. It was just the wet conditions we had this fall. Some of the crop just had some disease issues, and just some of it, just the quality just won't be there, and just overall loss of yield.
But Sandbachen says the market has responded to the shorter crop yields.
The old crop prices are the crop that we just harvested right now. The prices have gone up about $2 to $2.50 a hundredweight, And on new crop for 2020 that's being contracted right now, prices have increased about $1.50 a hundredweight, and we're at about a six-year high right now from where we were for new crop prices. So very, very positive.
Sandbachen says that could bode well for the 2020 crop year.
The industry is going to be aggressive to get those acres for 2020.
John Sandbachen. A series of workshops across the state of Minnesota will help farmers prepare for the transition of their operations to the next generation. University of Minnesota Extension educator Megan Roberts says many farmers are nearing retirement, and they're concerned about keeping the farm in the family.
I think it's a really admirable goal. We want to keep farmers and farm families going on the land. It is a challenging goal right now, and so we're just trying to give folks as much information as possible so that if that is the goal that they have, they can make it happen.
Robert says relatively high land costs and low crop prices make it challenging for young farmers to make a profit. She says farmers need to start planning for the transition before they hit retirement age. And there will be a third party officially on the ballot in North Dakota. The Libertarian Party collected enough signatures to get its own column on the primary ballot. This is party chairman Dalton Brown.
Well, essentially what we did, there was a bunch of measures that were running concurrent. A lot of people were collecting signatures, and a lot of those folks that were collecting signatures were party members themselves. Myself and others, we collected a few signatures, but the main portion of the signatures were collected and gathered by petitioners that we had hired that were friends of the National Libertarian Party.
The Libertarians will have the names of three presidential electors on the general election ballot, but Brown says they'll also have a presence for local races as well. He's expecting Libertarian candidates will run for mayor and city council seats in municipalities around the state. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
Have you ever wondered how brands influence you? Is it the slick advertising or something else?
Lance Armstrong would go out there, you know, with this story of, I beat cancer, and I'm going to put on my gear, I'm going to put on that yellow bracelet. I had about 50 of them.
How companies get us to link their products with our identities, this week on Hidden Brain.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg in studio with chiropractor Dr. Christina Kraft. We spent the first half of the show talking about what she does, and very near the end of the conversation before the news, you brought up concussions, because of course you are doing a lot of work with rodeos. This is definitely a sport where people are prone to concussions. I'm also thinking football players, gymnasts, maybe even hockey players, car accident victims. I mean, concussions are big deals. Is there something that chiropractics can do for brain injury?
Absolutely. In fact, we should be part of, we maybe not are as common in that realm of care for a lot of people that do produce a concussion or have a traumatic brain injury. But this is where I'm at with this. In 11 years of taking care of people with traumatic brain injury or post-concussion syndromes or blows to the head from a sport, let's just take the football player real quick. They get hit on a Friday night. The athletic trainer checks them. They're clear. But then they start noticing things like sleeping too much, sleeping too little, headaches, rage, anger, bedwetting, even in a high school aged student. Headaches, I think I said already. Not eating enough. All of these different symptoms can progress if even a low-grade concussion, which was cleared, isn't cleared. So what happens is that we most likely have developed some type of whiplash into the cervical spine. Not only do we maybe have brain swelling, cervical subluxation happens pretty much all the time. Anybody gets blown to the head. Okay? So we would evaluate, x-ray, evaluate, get them under our care of adjustments, but we also would make sure that they are supplemented. Depends on the grade of their injuries as well, right? But clear them to be adjusted, get them under care. They're going to heal faster. They're going to feel better faster instead of just let's wait and see. This wait and see approach just really bothers me, because there are more things that we can do. And then we also want to make sure that we are on vitamin D3 and a really quality high dose omega-3 to get that brain functioning better. So it's not just adjustments. There's also nutritional support for these kids. Mm-hmm. But again, these aren't always have to be kids. We can get concussed on the farm. We can get concussed at work. Mm-hmm. We can get a brain injury during a car accident that has nothing to do with work or play.
That's where both of mine came from.
Right, right. Yeah. So as an approach, chiropractically, I believe, and I've got proof to tell you, that there are an immense amount of symptom relief and long-term health benefits by seeking chiropractic care after what you think your child has even a small brain head injury. Okay? They're cleared by everybody else, but they're still struggling at home. They can't focus on their schoolwork. Mm-hmm. They're wetting the bed. Headaches.
How does the bedwetting happen, and what other signs? I mean, you've mentioned them a little bit, but, you know, an adult can say, oh, my neck hurts. But a kid, does this manifest differently?
Yes, it does. It will manifest differently. So when our children are stressed from even a brain injury or not, okay, if we have a kiddo that's stressed, that's not functioning or thriving as well as they could be, the brain is not communicating with the body, hands down. Brain's not communicating with the body. We're getting symptoms, okay? The whole philosophy of chiropractic is go back to the spine for the cause of disease. Mm. Hippocrates even said that many, 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 many moons ago. Always look to the spine for the cause of disease. Well, here we go. We find a subluxation at C1 or L5, L3. These are the areas that would produce potentially discommunication between brain and body, leading to something like bedwetting. Bedwetting is pretty rare as far as maybe from a concussion perspective, but you're going to see things like stomach issues. Mm. Not wanting to eat, eating too much, sleeping too little, sleeping too much again.
It just sounds like teenagerhood.
Yeah. Then you okay, so then you get the teenager who gets concussed. The research is showing that when we have a blow to the head or a concussion in high school sports or even youth sports and we never have them treated properly, that's setting us up for depression and anxiety into our early 20s. Then it's not really treated right. We're then thrown antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds. Okay, I'm not against those, but again, I don't prescribe and I can't unprescribe. But what I can prescribe is a natural wellness option, chiropractic care, to improve the spine and connection to the brain. Okay, brain-body connection, decreasing symptoms naturally. And I'm going to tell you, I really hope that more and more parents, this is what they would want to try for their children. If they are concussed, again, this doesn't have to be a concussion to see a chiropractor. You will see behavioral changes in kids that are subluxated or needing adjustments. Most often, anxiety shows up in the child as stomach aches. So that's kind of one thing you had mentioned. How does it show up differently? Without a concussion or without one, anxiety in a child really shows up at, mommy, my tummy hurts. They don't sleep well. Their behavior mm-hmm. changes. They're maybe not in a lot of pain. If that helps kind of tell you a little bit more about what I'm seeing in practice.
Okay. What about now? I've seen kids that don't look old enough to even have verbal language yet. Do you do adjustments on babies, and how do you tell?
Oh, yeah. Mom brings them in because the most common reason a mom would bring her child in to see us as a chiropractor would be colic is the number one thing we can help treat naturally. Mm. Colic is going to be crying for hours per day, not sleeping, not latching on well during breastfeeding, or just not eating. And if they do eat, they vomit. Okay, projectile vomiting isn't really part of colic, but if your baby is fussy and not swallowing and not eating well, most likely they're subluxated from the birth process of pulling baby out. Can actually strain neck vertebrae as well as stretching nerves, which then we can see problems with the vagus nerve. So if you want to know more about baby and colic, anyone that's listening today, you can research vagus nerve and tone for colic within the baby. You'll find all kinds of amazing information out there in regards to natural health options. Chiropractic is helping people with colic, and we're also helping mom sleep better, dad sleep better, and baby's getting a natural a natural better start versus then just being put on drugs for their acid reflux, which is what they don't have most of the time.
You know, I think I could ask that same question, like how do you ask a baby what's wrong? You mentioned that you do some work or are working towards doing work on canine and equine clients, so dogs and horses. Do you just feel their spine and figure out what's wrong, or is this also evidenced in behavior, something that doesn't have a common language with you?
So if we were going to talk about the dog?
Yeah.
The dog first. Absolutely behavior and physical. So in my experience with dog is that they typically will have lameness. They will have, you know, we can work with them in their sinus issues. But for the most part, the most common thing that I've seen in the past, and again, I'm not currently checking dogs in the office, but there are times people are like, hey, doc, can you just check my dog at home? And I've done that. I'm going to be honest, I've helped somebody at home a few times. But it'll be usually those more chronic things like that, like almost all of a sudden they get lame in their legs. So we can check them. And, you know, there's different things that their veterinarian might put them on too for anti-inflammatory. But it's usually physical for a pet.
Okay.
And horse, same thing. Lameness. If they can't be ridden, they're going to go to the slaughterhouse. Okay. I don't know if we can actually do that anymore, but if a horse isn't able to be ridden, it's just going to go out to pasture. So if we can get that horse feeling better again, you know, so there's a lot more different things that you can think about as far as severity, but it's usually going to be some type of thing that us as humans want that dog or animal to do something and they're not able to do it. That's when they might seek chiropractic care. So,
on my desk, so our producer Skip Wood often is very helpful in doing some pre-research, and he left a brochure for me to prep for this interview called Coping with Farm and Rural Stress, and this is put out by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. What is your role as a chiropractor when it comes to farm stress?
Great, great question. Again, the families that I serve the most are rural families. They're coming in from Walker. They're coming in from Holly, Park Rapids. They're coming in to the Moorhead community to seek care, right? A lot of these folks need to come into Fargo-Moorhead or maybe a larger metro to get chiropractic care because, let's just face it, the rural community is underserved in all avenues of healthcare and chiropractic as well. So I was asked to speak at the Norman County Ag Days this last week. And again, in my previous time practicing in Nebraska, I also was around a lot of farmers, okay? So most of my patient base were beef producers, corn and soybean growers. That's just where I was. I was in a town of 5,000 people. All of those people were farmers for the most part. And the same thing here. Why? Because this is where I come from, I guess. This is what I'm trying to say is that I come from farming. I know what it does to the family when you're under low prices and you're thinking about closing up shop. What we're also seeing is an increase of suicides on the farm. We're also seeing increase of suicides in the military, you and I had talked about earlier. But in the farm family, it's near and dear to me the most. And these are the people that I want to help and serve the most, not only with chiropractic care, but with understanding that there's resources out there, specifically in Minnesota. I know there is in North Dakota, too. Hotlines and helplines for people that are in crisis financially, stress, emotionally, during their farm operations. So I guess I just want to be a resource and I want to be an advocate for truly the farm family that needs to ask for help because we are not meant to do this alone.
And this is a bit of a stereotype, but when it comes to farmers and especially that Northern Great Plains farmer is very, I'm going to say stoic, but part of me wants to say stubborn. About going in and getting health care at all, and then especially when you add this element of it's not the Western medicine approach that we grew up with.
Right. And here's the thing. I interviewed, maybe sat down and had one-on-one consultations with about 12 different farmers that day. It was a smaller event. And we get to the mental health questionnaires and we get to the emotional behavioral stuff. No, I don't have that. 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 That's part of it. We're not honest with ourselves. And eventually, what will end up happening is, let's just say I'm taking it to the extreme stereotype, is that there will be an accident on the farm. And the accident on the farm actually maybe isn't an accident because of the stress that farmer's going through. And what we're finding as I spoke with the extension officers with the Norman County, and there was a couple other people there that day, that the farm suicides are not adequately reported. Underreported is the term I guess I should say. Why would I, as a chiropractor, that's just my profession, right? I'm a chiropractor, that's my profession, but as a human, I want to help people on the farm. That's why I'm stepping into this mindset and this space of showing up and speaking to people about natural wellness options and to raise your hand and it's not a bad thing to ask for help. You're not a failure if your farm is failing. You're not a failure if your business is failing, whoever you are. I have had my chances and my fair shares of failures in my life, and I'm going to tell you that they're only been my strengths coming out of those things. So coming from farm family, coming from understanding that this is a real problem, that, you know, when our farmers are being docked dollars on bushels, and they're financially struggling to feed their families, the people that are meant to feed us are struggling financially to feed their own children. It just doesn't make sense. How do we get about it? Talk about it. Ask for help. Get them to the correct professionals that they need. And a holistic chiropractor like myself is just, I have these pamphlets ready to go. You a farmer in my are you a farmer that's a patient of mine? You're going to get this brochure. And I'm not going to take no for an answer. So.
If there was a rodeo for farmers, you would be at it.
Maybe.
Should people crack their own backs?
So many do. I
yeah,
know.
I did
the
it
teenagers.
Before you got here.
Teenagers, I see a lot. You know, I love going to airports and watching people. I love seeing. But what's really cool for me, being more of an intuitive based chiropractor too, I can tell somebody's mental status truly by their posture. Mm. I look at people all the time. A sick person will you'll see that in the way they carry themselves. And we're not talking about wheelchairs and people using, you know, what are these called?
Walkers.
We're talking about just overall their posture. Their body language really tells us something. And at least it does for me.
Down.
Right. Their body language always tells me something. But I would really not want people to do such a thing. First of all, the facet joints around the spine are really innervated by a lot of blood supply and nerves. So if you were to adjust yourself maybe in the wrong vector, in the wrong force, or if you have your kid walk on your back, okay, you yep, could actually create more inflammation around the capsules of the facet joints of the spine, which is what chiropractors really are addressing, okay, posterior and anterior movement. So if you were to over-adjust yourself, you're most likely going to end up in a walk-in clinic or a chiropractic office anyways eventually. So I would just be mindful to not over quote unquote, adjust yourself on a regular basis. So there might be a need for chiropractic if you feel like you need to adjust yourselves a lot.
Okay.
So
what about just if you notice your back is cracking a lot? Let's say someone is a yoga, is a yogi, and in class all of a sudden one day their back cracks a lot. Okay, one time, fine. But if it starts happening all the time, or if you walk down the stairs and things are cracking, so you're not doing it to yourself, but it's happening a lot. What does that mean? Is it time to go to a chiropractor?
Not necessarily. That tells me most likely your connective tissue is potentially stretching more and more. You're more hypermobile. So a hypermobile patient doesn't need to be adjusted as much sometimes. And as far as my techniques are concerned, there's different areas we wouldn't adjust as much. So hypermobility can come from being more cricks and creaks and things in your joints, but not always. We also will see a higher stressed individual will have higher cortisol in their body, and cortisol loves to soften our connective tissue. Yes, it's the weight gainer hormone, but we also see that it essentially makes our connective tissue, which is ligament, tendon, and fascia, more loose. So people are more able to, like a yoga instructor, if you're going into a nice twist, you'll feel some noises.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's not painful, that's okay. But we normally see, I like to tell people about that, higher cortisol, higher amounts of adrenal stress. We're stressed at work, at home, our kids are hockey on the weekends. We're going. Cortisol goes up, and it loves to soften connective tissue. How does it do that? It's a biochemical process in the body. But our joints can ache and hurt. Our muscles will hurt when we're under a lot of stress. And we'll also hear lots of ankles and knees and shoulders quote unquote cracking a lot. So I have to address that not only chiropractically when someone tells me this, that they're cracking all the time, but we address it nutritionally as well.
Okay. How about people cracking their knuckles? People go back and forth. It's like the studies on coffee. Coffee's terrible for you. Coffee's great for you. Coffee's terrible. Coffee's great for you. cracking your knuckles will cause something. Cracking your knuckles causes nothing.
I don't believe it causes, no, I think overdoing it again in moderation, there needs to be, if you tend to feel like you're always needing to, quote unquote, pop your joints, I don't like to use the word crack, but
okay.
Pop your joints and things like that. Again, there must be something out of alignment that is creating you to want to have to do that. Your joint capsules can be inflamed if you do over adjust the knuckles. Again, synovial joints, which have fluid, the shoulder, the knee. There's also some synovial fluid within the joints of our hands. So possibly people that have anything like arthritis of the hands, like rheumatoid or any type of psoriatic arthritis or any other type of autoimmune-based arthritis, them popping their hands all the time, probably really not a good idea. Okay. So if people don't know they have RA or even multiple sclerosis, those types of things, they really don't want to be overdoing it with their hand popping. So that's just kind of my little side note with that.
Okay. I remember there was a billboard campaign some years ago with the doctors, and it was just one thing, and it was drink more water. And then the next doctor would say, wear sunscreen. For you, Dr. Christina Kraft, what is your, if you just do one thing, make it this?
Sleep, because here's the thing. That alone would change, but then how do we get better sleep? That's the other question, and a chiropractic absolutely can help. But children need to, school-age children and teens need 9 to 10. They are not getting it.
No.
They are not getting it, not even close. And adults need 7 to 8 regularly, and we're not getting it either. So if we can improve our sleep, do the best we can to focus on that. What's going to improve our sleep? Many things. No, not sleep meds. That's not what I'm talking about. Better nighttime routine, less device time, more exercise during the day. There's a facet, right? There's a multifaceted approach. But we need to focus on improving sleep, and I do that with chiropractic adjustments.
Dr. Christina Kraft, thank you so much for joining us today. You can find out more about her practice at drchristinakraft.com, and that's Christina with a C and Kraft with a K. Dakota Datebook is next.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
Prairie Public is once again proud to be a media partner for the community-wide Celebration of Women and Their Music, happening at various venues in the Fargo-Moorhead region, Thursday and Friday, January 16th and 17th, and the main event at the Spirit Room in downtown Fargo, Saturday, January 18th, featuring regional artists Chris Kitko.
Is it because of the bra that I wear? Pay me equally now.
Jesse Veeder.
Bottom line below. 10,000 feet.
Viotti String Quartet, Taylor Page, Hot Lunch, and more. Now in its 23rd year, and founded by Fargo blues singer Deb Jenkins, Celebration of Women and Their Music recognizes artistic passion and fosters collaboration and mentoring for emerging and established artists. The Celebration of Women and Their Music, Saturday, January 18th at the Spirit Room at 6:30 p.m. Tickets available at eventbrite.com. Information about all shows can be found at debjenkins.com.
This is Dakota Datebook for January 13th. Celebrating the 100th year since the passage of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. This series is written and voiced by Sarah Walker.
Multiple attempts for women's suffrage were made in Dakota Territory and North Dakota before the approval and passage of the 19th Amendment in 1919. One of the first occurred during the 8th Territorial Session, held December 1868 to January 1869. The bid for women's suffrage, proposed as a bill for an act to confer upon women the elective franchise and the eligibility to office, first was introduced in mid-December by House Representative Enos Stutzman, an early pioneer in Dakota Territory. He had settled in Yankton in the fall of 1858 and eventually moved to Pembina in North Dakota. Stutzman was well-educated, worked as a lawyer, and, quote, possessed a splendid and powerful physique of perfect symmetry, except that he was born almost without legs, or with legs not more than a foot long, unquote. Stetson County was named for him. The bill Stetson introduced for full women's suffrage in 1868 is one of the earliest of its kind in the United States. However, general suffrage had appeared just the year before in the Dakota Territory, when legislators had successfully voted in favor of a suffrage act striking the word white from, quote, wherever it occurs in the election laws of this territory relating to the qualification of voters, unquote. A year later, the women's suffrage bill did pass through the House by 5 votes, 14-9, on December 23, 1868. The council, however, tabled it, then sent the bill to a committee, and an amended form was voted on and passed through the council on January 12, 1869, again by 5 votes, 9-4. The amended bill was sent back to the House, where it did not pass. A newspaper in Pennsylvania reported, "Dakota has gone back on the women. The women's suffrage bill passed the House and was approved by the council with an amendment submitting the question to the people. The House refused to accept this condition, and the council was determined that the husbands and fathers, likewise the old bachelors, should first have their say on the question. So between the two stools, the whole matter fell to the ground, and the women flirt their petticoats indignantly as they pass the Dakota legislators on the streets." I'm Sarah Walker.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
On the next morning edition, Democrats try to win back Iowa after it flipped for Donald Trump.
Republicans stand behind their candidate like the Democrats have to fall in love. We have to be like, oh, Barack Obama.
Also, are females being overlooked at music's highest institution?
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, please. 2020, induct more women. Thank you.
Hear the news plus stories that affect your world on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Hey, do you have a guest idea, a comment, or a question? It's easy to contact us. You can email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or on Facebook, we're Main Street at Prairie Public. Or you can call us toll-free, 888-755-6377. We want to hear from you.
That's it for this Monday edition of Main Street. Coming up tomorrow on the show, Bismarck singer-songwriter Chris Kitko. She will be one of the featured performers at this year's Celebration of Women and Their Music concert coming up in Fargo. And the interim president for Dickinson State University, Stephen Easton, speaks with Dave Thompson about some challenging times ahead at DSU because of budget cuts. That's coming up tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.